When the cloud moved as God led Israel from Mount Sinai to the Promised Land, the people were to follow it. Where the cloud rested, they rested. Similarly, we are not to move anywhere unless God moves us. God knows our weaknesses. Richard, in this discussion, will talk about how God knows how far we can move.
Okay, last week, if I remember correctly, we went all the way up to perhaps chapter 10, verses 11 and 12. I talked about this place of Paran. You remember that, me saying that last week? Paran. Numbers. Yeah, Jeff, why don't we just do a little bit of rereading on some of the stuff? I think maybe from verse 11 on to the end of the chapter. But the first part of the chapter was blowing of the horns. We talked a lot of bit about that, right? We had that pretty good covered last week.
Numbers 10, verse 11. In the second year, in the second month, in the 20th day of the month, the cloud lifted from over the tabernacle of the testimony. And the people of Israel set out by stages from the wilderness of Sinai. And the cloud settled down in the wilderness of Paran. They set out for the first time at the command of the Lord by Moshe. The standard of the camp of the people of Yehuda set out first by their companies. And over their company was Nashon, the son of Aminadab. And over the company of the tribe of the people of Issachar was Nataniel, the son of Zuar. And over the company of the tribe of the people of Zebulun was Eliab, the son of Helon. And when the tabernacle was taken down, the sons of Gershon and the sons of Merari, who carried the tabernacle, set out. And the standard of the camp of Reuben set out by their companies. And over their company was Eleazar, the son of Shedur. And over the company of the tribe of the people of Shimon was Shemuel, the son of Zerushadai. And over the company of the tribe of the people of God was Elisaph, the son of Duel. When the Kohathites set out carrying the holy things, and the tabernacle was set up before their arrival. And the standard of the camp of the people of Ephraim set out by their companies. And over their company was Elishama, the son of Amuhiad. And over the company of the tribe of the people of Manasseh was Gamaliel, the son of Pedazur. And over the company of the tribe of the people of Benjamin was Abidan, the son of Gideoni. Then the standard of the camp of the people of Dan, acting as the rear guard for all the camps, set out by their companies. And over their company was Ahizur, the son of Amishadai. And over the company of the tribe of the people of Asher was Pagiel, the son of Okran. And over the company of the tribe of the people of Naphtali was Ahira, the son of Enan. This was the order of march of the peoples of Israel by their companies when they set out. And Moshe said to Hobab, the son of Reuel, the Midianite, Moshe's father-in-law, "We are setting out by the place for the place of which the Lord has said, 'I will give it to you.' Come with us, and we will do good to you, for the Lord has promised good to Israel." But he said to him, "I will not go. I will depart to my own land and to my kindred." And he said, "Please do not leave us, for you know where we should camp in the wilderness, and you will serve as eyes for us. And if you do go with us, whatever good the Lord will do to us, the same we will do to you." So they set out from the mount of the Lord 3 days' journey. The Ark of the Covenant of the Lord went before them 3 days' journey to seek out a resting place for them. And the cloud of the Lord was over them by day, whenever they set out from the camp. And whenever the ark set out, Moshe said, "Arise, O Lord, and let your enemies be scattered, and let those who hate you flee before you." And when it rested, he said, "Return, O Lord, to the 10,000s of Israel."
Now back to where we're left off, that is on the 11th verse. Now, and when you read the history or find out where those particular areas, and I told you last week, so just a reminder, that they left from Mount Sinai And I told you last week I don't have it nailed down yet. I still don't have it nailed down of why it's the 20th day of the second month. I know it has relate to something very different, but I have not found a tracing in the writings where it is never connected to that very same phrase. But it's in the second month. Every time there's something in the second month, it's very important to pay attention to it, even though we think the first month is more important, and there's a one blip there, the third month, and, you know, seventh month is more important than all of them. But it's something to be able to pay attention to, because in my personal opinion, I don't see God writing these dates down unless there's a reason for us to see his pattern, his thinking, because he's the one that ordered the move. Now, we talked about last week when he says on the 20th day of the second month, in the second year, the cloud was taken up from the tabernacle of testimony. If you fully understand the difference between the tabernacle of testimony rather than the tabernacle. We read here that during the daytime, God covered all of them with a cloud during the daytime. But here, we have to be very specific, careful. You know, lots of times we think or have a vision that what he does, he went and covered everybody. I mean, the light was covered everybody all the time. But it says at the tabernacle of testimony, which is where is that located at? Remember? The Holy of Holies, where the ark is at. Okay? And where the mercy seat is at. And it says now in verse 12, and the children of Israel took their journeys out of the wilderness of Sinai, which means, remember, it means thorny, hard, and the mountain also is in the mountain of Arabia. I told you last week, it's kind of interesting that when you look at some of the Strong's himself did his research, he says it's in Arabia. And all the other ones figured he didn't know what he was talking about. And I told you last week, that's because somebody's mother said it was someplace else. So everybody followed somebody, this guy's mother, and believes it's always where the mother was right. And anybody else find anything of where Mount Sinai is or that mountain of Horeb? It's really in the land of what we call today Saudi Arabia, but in the lower section of Arabia. That's where Paran was. The word Paran means, basically, they translate it as being a place of caves. Well, it could be, but in the actual translation of that word, it really means to glorify, to be beautiful, to be adorned. So God moved them from one location to another. And this is my thinking. They went there to, in a sense, glorify them, ordain, make them beautiful, if I could use that terminology, or to adorn them, because they're where are they going at this point in time? And to the promised land. We'll find out how that went in a few more chapters. But it's just important that we kind of see the pattern of the book of Numbers from chapter 1 up to this point, and what was inside the camp, what was outside the camp, and oh, many other things that took place. So just to break a sentence, thought with you, and we don't have to go there, write down. In Genesis 21:21, this is where Ishmael lived. And it was not in Egypt, and nor was it down in what we call the Sinai Peninsula. Nor was it just plain north. It was on the other side of Jordan in Arabia. So actually Ishmael moved to the other side, to the land known as Arabia. Now, we'll go on to verse 13, because that's where we kind of left off. Remember we talked about the horn, the silver trumpets, gold, silver trumpets? And there are certain sounds it's supposed to make, and there's about four or five different functions of the use of the silver trumpets, not the shofar. And so now they're ready to move. And so, just like it says in the first part of chapter 10, it says, they took their journey according to the commandment of Yahweh, day by the hand of Moses, Now, what that commandment doesn't mean thou shalt. No, by the order of. And we have read there in chapter 10, first part of chapter 10, is that God came to Moses and told him specifically about making those two silver trumpets in order that they will be the sounds that the people will hear of who moves and who moves in what order and what fashion. And the rest of this chapter, or not the rest of the chapter, but section of the chapter here, it tells you that same order. I was asked last week, did he blow it every time for every tribe? The answer, of course, is yes. Here we have it. And he says, verse 14, the first place, or the first ones, went the standard of the camp of the children of Judah, according to their armies, and over his host was Nahshon, and the son of Amminadab. Now, I'm going to remember we had went through the names of the people. I find it a little bit fascinating. We'll go back to the names as we walk through this thing to see not a pattern, but the order in how the everything is going to go in a certain specific order and fashion. And I find it very fascinating to put the meaning of the names in these particular locations. So I'm going to reread this just a little bit differently. Back in verse 14. The first place went the standard of the camp of the children of hand out. The hand is out to receive something. According to their armies, and over his host was a delight observer. The son of kinsman is willing. Those are the three names within this first movement. And so we have a picture that, remember, there was, this is Judah, the house or family or the tribe of Judah. And we have a kind of a message here that they went out. They were diligent to observe things, pay attention to what to going on. And well, that is the name was, not necessarily the people, but the name. Because we know in history, look back on it, we keep going on numbers to find out they did not respond to the meaning of words. They just want to do other things. Let the chapter start showing up being complaining, the complaining and complaining, but we're not there yet. And on the 15th verse, over the house of the tribe of the children of recompense was given of God, son of insignificant, unimportant. It looked like it was not that important. And then that third one was, comes in, over the children of the tribe of children of exalted was God his father, the son of strength. So we have the first three armies moving here. So we have a pattern where God is showing us, what I've said before, when God has these names down there, they have to have a meaning because God is the one appointed all these men. He named these particular men for a purpose, for a reason. Not because they are that way, but because God is that way. I've talked to you about that before. I just find it very fascinating to go back over this thing. And then what happens next? The tabernacle was taken down. Okay? Now, who was to take down? Well, they had to take down the curtains and take down the boards. And they were to carry a bearing of the tabernacle. So the first group of Levites, the ones that were given unto the high priest, all right, were now carrying out their first function was to disassemble the whole tabernacle, take the curtains down. Remember, they had the stakes, and all the pins and holding it all up. And they had to take it all off, take it all down, okay? And then when that took place, the sound went out again for the camp of Reuben, like it says there in the first part of chapter 10. And what did Reuben do? Okay, let's read it in a different way. The standard of the camp of builders forward according to their army over the host was rock of God, son of casting forth fire. Verse 19. Over the host of the tribe of children of God hears was safety of God, rock of Almighty. These what the names mean. I'm only repeating these things because we went through them before and I just don't want to say we don't have to pay attention to the names anymore. It's very important to us to know that God specifically named them for a reason, and they were to do in a certain order, certain fashion, as they were commanded by Moses. God commanded Moses to lead them in that, this order. And so we have a function here of each one of these three sections of the house of Israel all around the camp, that we have who goes first, who goes second, who goes third, what Levite does this, who goes next, fourth, who goes fifth, who goes sixth, what Levite does that, who goes all the way to 12. And it's done in order. Not one of them was to do before. In other words, what I'm saying to you is that the tribe of, quote, Zebulun didn't go until after Issachar went, until after Judah went, okay? So it's these patterns that we have to kind of pay attention to. That kind of tells you that when I look at these things and I say, God is not the author of confusion, right? How precise is he in his movement? And we think, oh, it's a boring book. I find extremely fascinating to my mind how precise he is. And we should have more confidence in the creator of heaven and earth that he knows precisely exactly where he is taking us. And so if we, quote, are to hear the command, we follow in the direction and the order that he, the creator of heaven and earth, has said, go. Yes.
Can you just go through them again from verse 18 until the end where you left off?
End of 18?
From verse 18 on until the end of where you left off. The names and the...
Oh, well, yeah, yeah. And at verse 19, verse 18, the standard of the tribe of builders. That's what Reuben is called the first son. Now, I've taught you before, when you look up the word for son, what is the word for son in Hebrew? Ben. When you look up that word, it doesn't mean a boy or a girl. What does it mean? The strength of the beginning of a builder. That's the one that is the all it is due, and that's how it's related to one another. And so the very first thing we see here in chapter 18 is someone who's going, is a part of a builder. And the host of that tribe was Rock of God. Did you catch that one? The builder and Rock of God casting forth fire. Now, this guy didn't. He was... Elazur was not the rock of God, or that God is, you can translate here, you say God is the rock, that's fine, but it has to do with the description of whom? Always the description of the Creator. I find this over and over and over again, and God went out of his way to name these specific people, these specific ones, for a specific reason. For us to understand him and how he operates. And so we have to have confidence in his mode of operation, so to put it that way. And we have a nice, wonderful God who goes through and this particular movement. Now, we may think we don't like to wait for God to move us. However, we should not be moving anywhere unless the creator of heaven and earth, let's put it this way, the cloud moves and then we go with it. In our own spiritual life and our own flesh and blood life, everything that we do. This is the reason why I do not know where God is going to take me, but I'm not going to go to assume he's going to take me to New York, LA, Israel, Russia. I don't know where he's going to take me. Doesn't matter to me. All that matters is when he tells me to move, I move. Not if I move, because we are like anybody else. How many time places have you people lived all over the place? I lived here for almost 40 years. It's a long time. I'm in one house for, 42 years. It's a long time. And but now God said, may say to, now depart. I don't know. I'm not afraid, nor I'm not even troubled by that. I have some troubles I have to overcome, but that's just minor things for Richard Agee to develop with. Let's go on now. Verse 19. And it says here, the host of the tribe of the children of God hears. So God is hears something. What is God hearing? He's hearing, basically says safety of God. So basically what God is hearing, he's going to provide the safety. Or we call it, maybe want to call it today, deliverance. Or may want to call it salvation. But a salvation turns into a very religious thing, a religious philosophy. But in Hebrew, it means one who's been delivered from or will be delivered from something. Okay? Let's go on. And it's a rock of Almighty. Wow. So God hears God's safety with a rock of Almighty. Now, when we look at this word, we talked about that many years ago, and we know what that means. It means a God that has all power, right? He is so powerful that he can wipe away anything that's on the face of this earth, underneath the face of the earth, and above the face of the earth. All right? He can do all that. He has a commandment. He can tell the sun, "Sun, stop." That's a pretty powerful God, don't you think? And he says, "Sun, move back." Actually, he's telling the earth, "Stand still. Don't move. Earth, stop turning. Earth, go in reverse." That's an awesome thought, isn't it? And since we have that kind of God, and there's always going to be danger, it's always going to be the case of Hezekiah, a promise, an unusual promise of turning the earth back 10 degrees. You got amazing. That's amazing. But that's how God is. And he had mercy upon him not to take his life. That was kind of a nice one. Now we know it says rock of Almighty. We're hidden there with verse 19. And it goes in now to verse 20. And over the tribe of troop or troops, God has added son of known of God. So now we have Gad, meaning a troop or troops. Now there is an addition to it. God is adding something to, quote, the troop, the fighter, the trooper. You know, we kind of funny word to use troop, right? But it's sort of like one who goes into battle, right? Not one that stays home and has a cup of tea, but someone that goes to battle. He's actually out there, put it in the front. I don't know how many of you have been in the military, but when you're out there, you're in a tent. And you're waiting for the commander to tell you what to do next. And so you're sitting there waiting, and you're in the Army or Navy or whatever it is, what you're part of, and you're waiting for the next command. And the next command, in a sense, comes up and says, he's adding troops. I have a reserve for you. I'm bringing in a reserve. Now what do you do with that reserve? That reserve is known of God, or God knows that reserve. He knows those people that he is going to send. And then when that takes place, they move on. Then comes in the other section of the Levites. And they are to bear the things of the sanctuary of the tabernacle. And they came. Remember, this is the group that had to do what? They had to carry all those things that are sanctified. They had to carry the ark, the mercy seat. They had to carry, and what was inside of it. They had to carry the showbread. They had to carry the golden altar. They had to carry the menorah. Those things, but the high priest had to cut before they go into the Holy of Holies. One of the high priests would have to come in and cover everything up so that no one would be killed. It doesn't tell you how or when, but every time that place was covered up, they had to uncover it the next time when the clouds stopped moving. So they had to really, you know, work for a living, you might say. They had to work. And they had to carry them. They couldn't put upon an ox. They couldn't put it upon a donkey. They couldn't put it anywhere except on the shoulder. You know, brought them up. That's why most of them had a rod in there. So you could pick it up, put it on your shoulder, and you walk with it. I imagine the men would have had, or the Levites would have had, some kind of harness that wouldn't fall off their shoulder instead of having it always hanging on there with the arm. I imagine they had different ways of holding it up. But nonetheless, that's what their job was. And then the children of Ephraim, it says there, verse 22. Now, his name means, Ephraim means what? Double heap. Okay? So the standards of the camp of double heap, went out, they went next. That's on the west side. Now, this is the west side of the whole perimeter of the tabernacle. Okay? West side of it. And it was, a host was, God has heard splendor. God has heard the Son of Splendor. I find that very fascinating phrase. What did he hear? What took place just before they start moving? All the holy things were covered and taken and on their way out. All right. Then it comes on and it has to do with the sons of forget. Payment of God, rock is preserved. I don't have a complete understanding of that total phrase. I just kind of find it fascinating. We know that the rock is preserved. We're talking about what rock? The rock of God is preserved. And the payment of God is the rock that is preserved. All right? And basically, God has not really forgotten it. He's going to put it aside, shall we say. Now, what is that rock? Remember, all the holy things now are gone. The tabernacle is gone. Oh, everything is being moved. And now comes this other thing. Then Benjamin comes on the scene. Remember that? Now listen very carefully. I find it fascinating. I'm not saying it has any great purpose or meaning of unseenness. I only look at the names to help me to understand how God, if I can say this word, thinks. Or I may put another word, how the Spirit of God works. All right? The mind of God, the Spirit of God. And it says here, the tribe of the children of right hand, father of judgment, cutting a path. So, this one that's on the right hand, the father of judgment, judgment is, God is the father, making the judgment. And what is the right hand doing? If I put that phrase here, cutting a path for what? All right. Verse 25. This is fascinating. Cutting a path. The standard of the camp of the children of judge. And the host is brother of help. So the judge is going to have help. And the sons of people of Almighty. Remember the Apostle Paul talked about that we are to judge angels? The same pattern is still here. People that God has got to know, who we got to know him, he got to know us. There, when the judge does come, that is the Son of God comes, there's not going to be just him and him alone. He's not going to sit there and say, oh, I got these billions and billions and billions and billions of people. He's going to have help. All right? As what, when we get into the next chapter, tells you the same pattern sows up of help coming. When the job is too big, God sends help. And we will get that in the 11th chapter when we get to there. Anyway, let's continue here. And then there comes this last one, not last, the one in between, Asher. And he says, verse 26, and the host of the children of go straight, or those who go straight. Yes, Ellie.
It would appear that the New Testament is written in this, in code.
In code. Actually, let's put it this way. Prophecy, if I can use that terminology, I'll talk about that next week, is written here. But we don't look at it from that point of view because we like to hear the word prophet or prophecy. But the one who always produces true prophecy is not a man, but who? God himself. We'll go in more detail that next week. It's not connected technically with what next week, chapter about the 11th chapter, but I had to do some personal research in it, find out, okay, what does he really mean by this? And I had to do some research, and I got some interesting thoughts. Anyway, they're just thoughts, okay? And it says now, go straight, happening of God, to make trouble. Remember the judge? All right, guess what? We're talking how God's going to do. The judge, he's the right hand. Well, not the right hand. So where was that now? Verse 20. We have the judge, and there's going to help come, and it's people of Almighty. Do you see that picture? This is the reason why the Apostle Paul wrote what he wrote. So we must learn not how we judge, but how God judges. Now, what did the Messiah say? Oh, what is in the law and the prophets? Three things. Justice. We don't have justice unless there's a judgment. If there's no judgment, then there's no justice needed. Right? What's next? Mercy. All right? Now, after you've done, the judgment is done, justice is taking place, mercy is granted. We understand that mercy is the death of the Son of God. We understand that intellectually and what is written in Scripture. We understand that. But what's the last one? Trust. Now all you're being now is totally trusting in God and everything He says and everything He does, no matter what it is. You trust Him. That's what it boils down to. Okay, those three simple little phrases that are written there by the Son of God, meaning something, okay, a judge has to make a judgment, because if there's no judgment whatsoever, then there's no justice. You don't have to have a justice on something that's nothing's went wrong, right? I mean, why would you need to go to, quote, a dentist to have your teeth pulled when your teeth are in perfect condition, right? Well, same thing in a relationship. When you go to court, the judge says you're guilty of, and he can't find a single thing. And he says, okay, what's next? Well, he didn't have to give mercy because nothing there. Right? So we're talking about something much more significant. Later on, much deeper, especially in relationship to the New Testament. It's a very fascinating phrases in the New Testament. I will not go to there today, though. And then along comes the host of the tribe of children of Asher to go straight, happening of God, to make trouble. And I said, it's Naphtali who's wrestling. And what happened? It's unpleasantness. The brother is unpleasant having to fight. But eyes to receive. That's a very fascinating thing. When a judgment comes and God has put forth that judgment, is it going to be a pleasant one? No. Because we have an unable to live up to the spiritual law that God established back in the Torah. So we come to this point as, okay, we have this problem in our world, in our life, and there's a wrestling going to take place, and there's something that's unpleasant. But someone has eyes to perceive, to see things others do not see. I'm going to input something of my thinking. We know, we read the book of Revelations, right? And there seems to be nothing but chaos and trouble, let's say wrestling, fighting with God. And we really understand the book of Revelations when the seals are taken off and the horns are being blown and the thunders are being said and the bowls pouring down. It's all about God. Not about people, but God. Putting down upon him, vengeance or mine, it's the day of vengeance. And what happens? Is it going to be pleasant? It's going to be very unpleasant. And when it's all over with, something else must take place. When you resurrect the rest of the dead, they'll be judged out of the books. Who will be able to see and perceive? Those who have done according to the books will have eternal life. Those who have not done according to the books, will not have. So there is a vision, a seed of what is, and I cannot, as a human being, tell you who is who. I cannot judge that. But we hear this judgment. He's going to have help. He's going to do all these things. And he's going to have people of God assisting, if I use that terminology, the judge. And he's going to have this judge tell him, okay, there's some bad things are going to happen. And that's happening, the bad things are going to have to come from God. Keep walking straight. Do what you're supposed to do. And what's going to be next? Then you're going to have to go and you have to fight. Fight what? Fight basically not the devil. Fight people. You know, when the resurrection of the dead shows up, it says in Ezekiel, they were terrified, frightened, scared. They're going to die. That's all they knew. And the people that, you know, that you don't know, the last thing they're ever going to remember, the last thing that ever happened to them. Even those who are, let's say, on the deathbed, but no one seemed to talk to them, the mind still works. They're going to remember that. Now, they won't see hope, but will they hear it? I think that's probably the function, my personal thinking, that the people of Almighty will instruct those who are resurrected from the dead and instruct them and teach them and guide them. Remember, there will no longer be lies. There no longer will there be deception. They're gone. All the, quote, demons and all the, quote, fallen angels and the, quote, fallen archangels are gone. They disappear. They don't exist anymore. They're goodbye. They're in Hoshech. That means no life. No life, no light, no nothing. Because we know from Revelations, from John, that the Messiah is called the light and the life. And the Messiah was brought forth out of Hoshech. We'll go into more detail that much later. I'm still writing about that. I see a lot of things differently enough that I've been... It's funny, now I've been unemployed. And I have to clean up the place, throw this away. We need to sell that. No, we just dump it. Just give it away. Do something with the stuff. We don't need it anymore because, you know, at our age, what am I going to do with that stuff? No value anymore at my age. But now I sat down and I can actually study, take a long time, day in and day out. I'd be in trouble, see. I'd be day in and day out studying. My wife has said, where are you? That's what I did. That's what I would do. I find it very fascinating. And since I have more time in research and development on a daily basis, it's more amazing. So I guess you might say, however God's going to treat me, I know this much. I think it would increase my understanding more than I ever was before. Okay. Before we continue, do you see a pattern why in the very first part of chapter 10, about the golden trumpets, silver trumpets, but there are four. There's only two of them. And when you blow the trumpet, something, there's five different things for it should be done to do and do certain functions. Just the silver trumpets, not the shofar. And you look that up in Hebrew if you want. It is not the same word as shofar. It is not. It's a silver trumpet. And that word really means a trumpet or a clarinet. And it's translated into, I say, the best translation you can have in English, okay? And those are the trumps that it says that he will use to call forth in the four winds and all around the heavens those unto the Son of God. And in a certain order, first the four winds and then all around heaven. That is heaven in our atmosphere. All right. Now, verse 29 has to do with somebody. And sometimes it's like saying, okay, so he's got a father-in-law. And Moses wants him to come. Why? Because Moses loves him? Oh, is this a gesture? Or did God have something to do with it? What is the name of his father-in-law? You know what that name means? Friend of God. So God said, I am going to have this man try with you, Moses, that you will know I am your friend. I am the friend of all of the house of Israel. They are mine. Therefore, I'm not out to be their enemy. I'm out to be your friend and their friend. So take your father-in-law along with you, and we'll tell Moses, tells him something. Now you know that I am with you. I find that fascinating. Was it a coincidental? I mean, it makes no sense for his name to be shown up here in the 10th chapter on their journey going into the promised land, except the name. So once again, I think of names, and the name is friend of God or God's friend. However you want to translate that back and forth, does it make a difference? Because Hebrew leaves out certain prepositions and certain verbs that don't exist. They just make a statement. And so he says, okay. In verse 21, it says, "Thou want to be we need to see you, and your eyes will be able to tell us not the best place to camp, but basically how to encamp in the wilderness." Because the Father, the friend of God, God will show them by and through, quote, this man, end of quote, where the best place for you to set up the tent, set up the tabernacle, set up the tabernacle testimony, and where to set up the people. Make sure there are, this is on the east, and that's on the south, and this is on the west, and that's on the north. They had to kind of organize it. So God put it in the hands, in a sense, in the hands of Moses, to set it up. Because he was told. That's what God told Moses to do. Set it up in this fashion. Set it up in this pattern. Set it up in this purpose with those who I want around about the tabernacle and the Levites around the tabernacle and the high priest, the priesthood, and their location. They're all where I want them to be. And so sometimes it's kind of telling you that God says, I'll show you the best place by using and by telling Moses, and maybe us, if we try to understand, I'm your friend, Moses. I'll show you. By and through your father-in-law. Because I will guide him. Do you find that? That's my thinking. Maybe has no purpose. Otherwise, we don't need verse 28 and verse 29 and verse 31 and verse 32. Just go right into verse 33. Yes.
We need those verses.
I'm sorry, what?
We need those verses. That shows purpose for each person.
Well, God doesn't do anything in vain. He doesn't do anything in hoshek. I mean, doesn't do anything in tofu or kofu. In vain, in emptiness, and blackness. He does things in the light. If there is darkness, he brings forth light. Not that he can see, because light represents life, not death. Hoshek represents death, right? And of course, we go through this thing, and they went there, and they went a 3 days journey. Very fascinating phrase, by the way, 3 days journey. And the ark, and the covenant, and it went forth for them on throwing 3 days journeys and stretched out to the resting place for them. So now the cloud has been moved. But they're traveling for 3 days, so they don't get to rest and sleep and unpack. Have you ever felt in your life that, man, I can't seem to stop doing, I keep going, I can't, no time to rest. And you keep doing this, doing this, doing this, doing this, and all of a sudden the time, whew. You know, most of the time, I find it fascinating, when God has you on the move at a very rapid pace, he stops you on Shabbat. He stops you, says, stop. Okay. And there's a break, or say there's a relief. And he doesn't leave until he's ready, and he's ready. Actually, when he knows they are ready. Because God does not lead us by force. He leads us by his will. And what does God look out for us? They walk and look for us in our weakness. They look for us knowing that we are flesh and we can't move like he can move. Of course, because he created it, right? Remember when the Son of God said to his disciples when they wanted him to pray? And he says, okay, stay awake. Well, wake up. Okay, let them sleep. Their spirit is willing. We'll talk about that next week also. They'll let them sleep. I just find interesting things. And of course, a cloud would cover them by day. Doesn't say he covers them by night. He goes back into what's called the tabernacle of testimony. There's light there. Quote, there's life in that tabernacle of testimony. Not fire and things catching on fire and burning into ashes, but light. Meaning life was in that holy of holies, in that tabernacle of testimonies. That's where the living representation of the living God, or if you might want to say, the Son of the living God is at. One that is alive and stays there. The living, we use this phrase, right? The living God. Now, of course, he's living. He is life. He's the one, that's what he is. Life, God, same word. in its true sense, that terminology. And of course, here Moses goes, we have that, by the way, in one of our songs, I can't remember which it is. It has to do with, I can't remember one of the songs we have, but arise, O Yah, and let your enemy be scattered. I don't remember what song that is. The phrase of that song is in there. Actually, probably comes from the book of Psalms. But here it is that Moses is saying this thing. And it comes down, the time to stop. And he said, now return back to many thousands of Israel. Come back. And he does. So, it's 3 o'clock, right? Okay, I got a few things to say about the 3 days. But right now, let's move up to verse 24. And the cloud of Yahuwah was upon them by day. We read that. And they went out of when they went out of the camp. So when they had to move, God moved them out by day. And of course, the ark was set forth, and Moses raised up Yahuwah and let every enemy be scattered. Repeating the same. Oh, I actually read that, didn't I? Okay, I thought I missed it. That's why I re-added it. So let's go back these 3 days. Journey, 3 days' journey. You remember in the book of Exodus when Moses went to Pharaoh for the first time and said, let us have a 3 day journey to worship our God. Now, what he didn't tell you is what 3 day journey is it? When does it begin? And we can assume it should have been gone immediately. No. God was leading them up to, I'm going to move you out. And you go after I move you out on the third day, wait. Now, the 30 days comes up. Something happened the third day. Every single time. Now, I found when I researched this thing, and the third day, I find it very fascinating. Remember Abraham? He was on a journey. Now, it's funny. It says there in Genesis 22, verse 4, and on the third day, Abraham saw the place, which is afar off, a little more traveling. You go, it wasn't several days. It was then and there. On the third day, he saw. What happened on that third day? Take him another 10 days to get to where the far off? No. On that third day, what was he supposed to do? Sacrifice his son. I know it's just coincidental, right? Now, very interesting phrases that make sense. Whether we think about them or not, we have to come and think and say, there's a time when Abraham had to make an oath at Beersheba. And that was a journey, a time on the third day it took place. And we go on down to Genesis 30, verse 36. This has to do with Jacob and Laban. I don't have a picture completely, but once again, 3 days. Find that fascinating. And he, meaning Laban, set 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob. And Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flock. So they were 3 days apart from one another. Now, interesting, on the third day, or the 3 days, I don't have a picture. Now, we think perhaps. No one ever kept the Sabbath, didn't know the fourth day. No, Abraham knew, every man knew, they all knew. Just what happened on Mount Sinai was the Israelites for 400 years didn't know what day it was. And so they had to be taught. And for 7 weeks, they were taught the Sabbath, the Sabbath, the Sabbath, the Sabbath, the Sabbath, constantly, what day the Sabbath was. All right? Now, in Genesis 31, verse 22, and here now, Jacob fled. And he was told on the third day that Jacob took off. Interesting phrase again. Now, when you look at this thing, is it a matter of life or is it a matter of death? You could say yes, and you could say maybe, but not always. Why was Jacob running? Why was Jacob running? His life was not at stake. He wasn't going to be killed. He gave a reason why he's leaving, because you've cheated me several times. Okay, that's a good reason to leave. Leave your boss, right? Human-wise, that makes sense. But it is God who said, take off. If you remember correctly, God told Jacob to leave. Jacob didn't come up on his own thinking, I need to leave now because my father-in-law is a rotten creep. He had to leave because God said, now. He said, I had a dream, if you remember correctly. Jacob said, I had a dream, and this is what God told me to do. Remember the sticks, one color? I got the ones that are spotted and all that. Got, Jacob got those that were clean and pure and holy and just and good. Was with Laban God? Remember that? On the animals? Now, Jacob was given the spotted ones, the marked ones, the impure ones. Let's put it in a phrase that maybe we can use, the unholy ones, okay, of the animals. Now, when you reread that, he didn't do anything trickery. He didn't say, I came up with a great, wonderful, brilliant way of separating sheep and making them mate back and forth. He said, I saw it and God told me in a dream. How many people have God talked to in a dream when you look at the biblically form? Not very many. Very rare. Extremely rare. So, it's just a fascinating thought to go through. We also know something about, in the time of Joseph, on the third day, something was going to happen to the baker and the winemaker. One was going to be given death, the other was going to be given life on the third day. And it actually took place. Now, we can relate that to 3 days means life or death. I agree with you on that one. I don't have a problem with it. The only, and then the Messiah, of course, give me 3 days, and then the third day I'll rebuild the temple, meaning himself, of course. That is God, though, had to resurrect him from the dead. He did not resurrect himself from the dead. And there are other very fascinating things that we have. This is back in Exodus. I told you that God told Moses to leave. And it says here in the third chapter, 18th verse, and they shall hearken unto thy voice. Oh, we'll go back to verse, no, right there. And thou shalt come, thou and thy elders of Israel, unto the king of Egypt, and ye shall say unto him, Yahweh Elohim of the Hebrews has met with us, and now let us go, beseech thee 3 days journey in the wilderness, that we may sacrifice to God. Now, I know Sesame DeMille only showed 2 people going before Pharaoh. Did you notice that? Had 12 others with him, each one of the leaders of the tribes. So you had Moses and Aaron. Well, Aaron probably would be a leader of the Levite tribe. Anyway, but no, not. And there was all the other elders, leadership. And we sometimes picture, it was just the 2 guys. No one else saw. No one else knew what was going on. You know those guys, you know what they saw? What's the first thing they saw? What was shown to them first? What was the first thing that Pharaoh saw? What was the first thing that God did at the time when Moses and all these men were facing Pharaoh for the first time? It turned into a snake. And they threw them down, turned his neck, and he gobbled them all up. That was the very first thing those elders saw. when Moses went to Sidon for the first time. And so sometimes when we have a picture in our minds, those 3 days now, he says, we need to go out for 3 days to sacrifice unto God. Notice it doesn't say what month, doesn't say what year, doesn't say, it just says 3 days journey. 3 days journey. I find that fascinating. God is never late. He's never early. He's always on time. I find that fascinating because sometimes when God sends us out or has us in our own spiritual world going through a loss of a hardship that's a burden, it doesn't do it on day one. He takes you from day one. He takes you to day two. And in day three, you're released from the burden. And they were, weren't they? On the third day, they were out. The first day, they had to leave, right? And they had to go to a place of Sukkah. The next waiting stop was where? In the wilderness. And then they rested. Then they stopped right there. They didn't travel anywhere on the third day. Which tells you it's either a holy day or a high day or God's presenting something to them. So in your life and in my life, when the cloud is over your life, it is doing something for you. What is it doing? Protecting you. The cloud protected them. The cloud didn't speak. The cloud protected them. From what? It was a dark cloud from the elements of the earth. Okay? So in your spiritual life, what is the Spirit of God, or say the cloud of God, over in your spiritual world? What is he doing? Protecting you. From what? From above. Because remember, the nation of the, they're all rebellious angels up there doing bad things. And so when he comes back, or say God is now done his journey, he's gotten rid of the enemy, he's scattered the enemy, he's scattered them all over the place. All those that are the principalities of the air that we are fighting against, not flesh and blood, right? So when that cloud is over us, the enemy cannot bring down an attack. That is, the principalities, plurality of the air cannot penetrate through the cloud. Do you trust God? Then he protects that. Am I making sense to you? I find the cloud very fascinating in its function. Particularly them at the place of water and walking over the into the water, right? Oh, blackness to protect them from the enemy. Physically, it was on the ground, right? So we have this dark cloud that when it entered into the tabernacle, entered into Solomon's the temple that Solomon made, it was doing something. It was telling everybody, I'm going to protect you from principalities of the air. Although it doesn't say that. But he says, always look to the temple when you pray. Now, it's a physical thing. It's gone. It's been wiped off the face of the earth. It will not return. But the temple is what? The Spirit of God. So we always look to the Spirit of God for that protection. So we have this thing, what I've said earlier. I find a little bit fascinating. All right? What Yahshua said, justice, mercy, and trust. We have to say to ourselves, I trust. He always has the cloud over me. During hard times, during good times, he always has the cloud over us and protecting us. Yes?
Would that be like the blood of Yeshua also?
I'm sorry, what?
Would that be like the blood of Yeshua also?
No, the blood of Yeshua just gives you life. It's not hovering over you. Once you have received the blood of the Messiah, you don't need it anymore because you've got life. Okay? It's the protection. I'm talking about the cloud being something that protects you from something. Okay? That the power of God protected you from the dangers that are all around about us that we do not see and he doesn't want us to see. If we actually could see quote, the spirit world, end of quote, we would probably, what, jump up and down with joy? We'd be so terrified, our spirit would be just be so weak and so frightened, we wouldn't know what to do. Now, God just covers it, prevents them to having harm us. Now, we can come out under the cloud, and we so decide to run away from or not want that protection. That's our problem, but not God's.
You've been listening to a discussion at Hillel Fellowship. If you would like to hear more discussions or if you have any questions, visit the website at hillel.info. That's H-A-L-L-E-L dot I-N-F-O. Hillel.info.